Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily.
Ladies and gentlemen, not only did we get Tommy Caster participating in his final Hawaiian shirt Wednesday, he found Max's Hawaiian music. The double whammy on a Wednesday. Good morning, everybody. Happy Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. We are celebrating. It is Tommy's last Wednesday on the show, in style, I should say. Looking good out there in the best Hawaiian. And look, the movement, sometimes it takes time. Sometimes there is resistance. But in the end, just give in. It's a lot easier.
Yeah, I mean, look, I wanted to throw you a bone on my final Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. I have to admit, I've got a confession to make on my final Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. I have a closet full of shirts like this. And so I think that my resistance towards all of it, if I can be honest, and we can have a therapy session here very early in the morning, it's jealousy. Like I was jealous that I had to try to be professional and not be able to wear shirts like this every Wednesday to do my job after this show. So I was lashing out irrationally. I think I can admit that on my final Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. But I wanted to find a shirt that fit, and here we are today.
Well, listen, now you'll be in charge here. So you could just going to throw this out there. You could make it a requirement across the Odyssey stations that we have Hawaiian Shirt Wednesdays.
That's
now.
A bold move.
That's a thing.
That is a bold move.
It's a move. Look, and if you're trying to have an impact early, you show up on a sales call and one of these bad boys,
man,
instant connection.
You think our ratings and our revenue will go up?
Absolutely. Morale will, if nothing else.
There you go. What do you think about this one, by the way? Are you a fan of this?
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot.
It's probably the loudest one I have. I was going through and I'm like, I got to find the one that is the loudest.
This is what I came up with. I'm a fan. I think that if people would just give it a shot, they'd like what happens. I'll bet you $1 right now that you get at least 3 compliments on that shirt today if you wear it all day. At least.
Yeah. I'm going to confess to you, I brought another shirt. It's sitting on
a
chair.
Don't do it.
Right over
don't
there.
Don't do it.
I plan on switching it out as soon as we're off the air.
Don't do it. Don't do it. It'll be fine. People will notice and they will appreciate it. They'll like it. Welcome in, everybody, to Sports Daily. We're glad you're here with us. We've got a fun show today, as always this time of year. We'll begin to look ahead to Chiefs-Giants. It is a little troubling when you go back historically and look at this particular rivalry. So we will go into that. The Royals, boy, they fall hard out of the gates in the final homestand, never gave themselves a chance. So we'll dig into last night's game and look ahead. And then KU insider Shreyas Lada is going to join us today as we look for the first time, really. We'll dig into KU, their chances in the Big 12. What do we think of this opening game? It's all coming up for you. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company, celebrating National Pepperoni Pizza Day this Saturday, September 20th, $9.20. Get it? September 20th. Pepperoni Pizza, pepperoni pizza, or WBC's famous pepperoni rolls. Enjoy National Pepperoni Pizza Day at WBC Saturday, which is September 20th, with $9.20 specials. Wichita Brewing Company, pepperoni pizzas and beer made here. We go through, Tommy, and boy, that was just a total gut punch as the Royals, they give up 10. It was 10 runs in the first four innings.
Yeah, I think they were down. I know at one point in the four, I think at the fourth inning, they were down 9-0. I don't remember if the Mariners made it 10-0 before the Royals finally got on the board.
Ten in the fifth.
You know, they scored a few runs, you know, late in the game. I like Carter Jensen. I think the Royals like him a lot too. If you're going to try to take something positive away from this, it's that, you know, it's that Carter Jensen showed up and, you know, he's probably the long-term, like very long-term future at catcher. You know, obviously Salvi is entrenched there, but he's not getting any younger. They like him a lot. And, you know, he showed up with some power late in that game.
Yeah, that split could come as early as next year, right? He could play the role that we've saw Freddie Fermin play for a long time, and that's good news for the Royals. And I don't want to close the door on their season quite yet, but that one you can't really have that. Michael Wacha returns from the IL in the 12-5 loss, goes just 2 2/3, gives up 7 of those 9 runs. So clearly, he was not at full strength or whatever is going on there, but. It's unraveling. So we can continue the conversation, though, of evaluating this season in the grand scheme of things and, you know, how much of a disappointment it's been. Jalen Thompson asked us that yesterday, and I've been thinking about it a lot. So we'll do that today as well. It's the reality setting in. I'm a Rangers fan. Their reality is setting in after they've dropped the first two games of a critical series to the Astros. So look, it's going to be tough. It's a tough time for a lot of baseball teams, right now. So,
I mean, hey, as a Rangers fan, you're probably cheering hard for the Royals too this week to try to take down the Mariners. Yeah. So the Rangers can get back in the mix in that wild card race.
I am. They've won 10 straight though. I think the Rangers, it sure looks like now the Rangers are probably chasing the Red Sox, oddly enough, who have stumbled a bit. The Mariners win 10 straight. Apparently, some guy bought like a spell off of Etsy from a witch to try to help the Mariners win a bunch of games, and it's working.
Yeah, that sounds irrational.
Yeah, well, listen, it's baseball. You got to get totally irrational. And if you're a Mariners fan especially, you really got to get irrational. The big dumper, Tommy, with two more home runs, leads the big leagues, the most ever by a switch hitter, 56 as a catcher. The Cal Raleigh-Aaron Judge debate will be really interesting. You know, the Bobby Witt Jr.-Aaron Judge debate from a year ago was a little different, right? They're both, like, the metrics love both of those players. This will be more of an old school versus new school. Like, if your war is everything, you're going to vote for Aaron Judge. But if you're not, then you're probably going the big dumper here as the MVP this year. That will be a really interesting thing to watch.
Yeah, I think that with Raleigh, I mean, obviously he's breaking records left and right based on who he is, what position he plays, the way that he bats, all of that. I mean, you mentioned most home runs by a switch hitter. I mean, he broke Salvi's record, most home runs by a primary catcher. Salvi set that, that was back in 2022, I think, was when he hit 50 home runs. And so Raleigh has blown that out of the water as well, with still, you know, a handful of games to go where he could hit even more home runs. So, you know, that's been such a fun story to watch this entire year. And then the Mariners in general, I mean, the additions they made at the trade deadline to surround Cal Raleigh and their pitching staff, they're going to be an extremely dangerous team in the playoffs.
Yeah, I had a futures bet on them a long time ago. I feel good about it as a potential World Series winner because you love their rotation and now they've got some bats to back it up. Maybe we get into that. We'll certainly get into it over the next couple of weeks, the Raleigh case for MVP. But We've still got baseball to play. The Royals will play tonight. When we come back, though, let's start to look at Chiefs Giants. Have you looked at the history of this matchup? We'll do it next on Sports Daily.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily, Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. Glad to be here with you. Everybody's participating because it's Tommy's last Wednesday, and he feels guilty. And that's okay. Whatever the reason. We appreciate it. Thanks, everyone out there who's participating in the movement. It may be a movement of one, but two today. All right, let's talk Chiefs here, Tommy, as we get you ready for it. And first tell you, you can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount+. Stream your local NFL game live every Sunday, all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year. It's like $2.50 a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. We look ahead to the Giants. Chiefs are, the line's moving around a little bit. You know, it's been anywhere between 6.5, I think, and 7, which feels about right to me. It feels like the Chiefs have this opportunity, but man, if you have you looked at the history of this matchup?
Well, I mean, I know the Chiefs have never won at the Giants. I did see that yesterday. Yeah, in the entire time they played.
The only team left in the NFL where the Chiefs have not won there. The last time they played, hat tip to Brandon Zinner, it was the Travis Kelce throwing an interception game.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The 12-9 loss in overtime back in 2017. Yep. The then 1-8 Giants took down the Chiefs. The Chiefs were pretty good that year. So it's been a weird matchup. They're only 4-11 all time. 4-11 all time against the Giants. Like, this has been a historically bad, and they don't play them very often. Only three times since 2013. They have not played them since 2021, a game that they did win at Arrowhead. But it's been a weird little series, like maybe the most forgettable series, to be perfectly honest, that the Chiefs have with any team across the NFL. And that's where they'll go Sunday. They hit the road, primetime game. We know the Giants have, as bad as I think they are, and make no mistake, I think they're bad. They do have some guys that scare you. History's not on your side. The present's not on your side to a great deal because the Chiefs haven't played particularly well yet. So it's a little unnerving. I'll be honest.
Yeah, can I tell you what I think the biggest thing the Giants have on their side is desperation. I think that's the biggest thing they've got right now, where like nobody expects much of anything from them. And that really is, I think, from the top down. Like, Brian Daboll, I think, is kind of, you know, a walking dead man a little bit. He's got to have a huge year, I would say, to be able to keep his job. Same thing with the general manager there. Russell Wilson has been put out to pasture multiple times in his career, so he doesn't have, you know, like really any expectations on his shoulders. He can just go out there and let Russ cook, right? And that's kind of what he did against the Cowboys. I don't like Russell Wilson. I don't think he's very good anymore. But he certainly, you know, has that desperate factor where
that one thing really
that plays really well to what he does well, and that's the deep ball. So he's got that going for him. And then they've got some young skill players as well that, again, there aren't a whole lot of expectations for the team as a whole. So it lets guys like Malik Nabers and even Cam Scadabo, who broke out a little bit last week, really kind of shine. So, I mean, those things all together, yeah, it makes me a little bit nervous just because they don't have a whole lot to play for right now. Everybody's already written them off after 2 weeks in the season. And so they can kind of just let it go hang all out.
They can. And look, the Chiefs, the other side of that is the Chiefs are desperate too. At least they better be. Right, they better feel a sense of desperation. I think this game would scare me more if the Chiefs weren't 0-2 with their back against the wall in a lot of ways. That's what keeps taking me back to, man, I think they're just going to go handle their business here this week because they're the better team. Even with all their injuries, they're for sure the better team. They have the better quarterback. They have the better coach. They have the better defense. Like, all of these things are true. They're not playing particularly well, but man, if the Chiefs have to be equally desperate, although in a different way, of course, but they got to be equally desperate. If the Chiefs aren't desperate right now in this game, then they've got a different kind of problem. They better be desperate, because they go 0-3 with a loss to the Giants. And now you're talking about real danger of like missing the playoffs, right? We're having a totally different conversation next week if they screw this one up. 0-2, you're trying to get people back healthy. At some point, you dig too much of a hole, because what do you have to then do the rest of the way? Lose no more than four games? Well, for three more, you don't even have Rashee Rice. So there has to be a sense of desperation right now in that Chiefs locker room, because they have to win this game. I mean, it's as must-win game for this kind of team that's been always there for the last decade. It's as must-win in a negative way that they've faced, honestly, probably in Patrick Mahomes' time as a starter. Now, obviously, that's relative to you must win a Super Bowl or playoff games. Let's call it in the regular season, how about? In a negative way, it's as must win as we've seen them face. I don't think that's a stretch. And that's why I think they're not going to fall into this trap that is very like apparent and obvious that, you know, here's the trap. We can all see the trap. It's not hidden. It's right there in front of us. Don't step in it.
Yeah, I think on top of that, they've got to make sure that, you know, they put their foot on the gas and don't let up. Like they absolutely cannot let up in a game like this, because it could be very easy, and it might be a little bit different if they weren't also 0-2, but it could be very easy for them to be like, yeah, we're playing the Giants. They're not very good. Like, we can kind of let up a little bit and, you know, maybe not go 100% the entire way. We can maybe go 95% or 90% and we'll be fine. You can't afford that at this point, because again, your backs are up against the wall. I was looking at this yesterday, and I was trying to get a little bit more insight in Xavier Worthy's injury and what things will look like for him in week three. And there's optimism that he'll play, in this game. I think it was Ian Rappaport that reported that the Chiefs are optimistic that Worthy will play against the Giants this weekend. And I was looking at, is there a lot of precedent for players that have this kind of injury that are playing with it, with a torn labrum? And there are a couple of examples, and there are some notable examples. George Kittle apparently played with a torn labrum for like 2 years before he finally had surgery to correct it. Odell Beckham Jr., he admitted, I looked this up, he admitted that he had played with a torn labrum for a decade before he finally got it fixed. And so it does look like it is an injury that players can play through. And
that
you'll,
makes me feel better.
You'll often notice that players that have this injury, and Kittle is a great example of this, wear like a protective sleeve and usually do, like, it just becomes part of their what they wear, their gear that they wear each week for a game. So that could very easily be the case for Xavier Worthy as well. No word yet. I know we're still relatively early in the week. No word yet on what his practice status has been and what that will look like, but at least there is a precedent for a couple of notable players that have played through. By the way, George Kittle went to the Pro Bowl both years that he played through a torn labrum. So it doesn't, even though like it's probably painful and there are some issues there, at least in the case of George Kittle, it didn't impact his production.
Well, and that's really interesting. And I'm glad, like, catch radius is the first thing, right, that comes to mind when you think about that injury. So when I hear Kittle, I'm like, okay, well, he doesn't have quite the same needs on that as a guy like, but Odell Beckham Jr. certainly would.
Yeah.
And honestly, the way that they use Worthy, it is going to be kind of on a route tree similar to Kittle, right? It's a kind of underneath. It's not gonna hurt his legs, which is what they want him to do, which is run after the catch. So that's pretty promising, to be perfectly honest. I think that helps. And if it's a pain tolerance thing, I would imagine he'll play this weekend, right? If the only thing that he's dealing with right now is the pain tolerance that's always going to be there, he'll probably play. I don't know, without surgery, like, how much better does it get until you have the surgery after the injury? So how much longer might he need to wait? Well, we should find out, but
it may well be something that he plays through the entire season, where he's dealing with just a torn labrum, and then he, you know, elects to get it repaired in the off season or whatever the case might be. But I agree with you. I also think that even just his presence on the field, even if he's not garnering the targets as much, or like his actual stat line isn't quite as large as maybe what we would have expected, that does help the other guys out on the field for sure. It provides, number one, another option for Patrick Mahomes, and probably a top option for Patrick Mahomes. But think about the connection, and I know it took a couple of tries, but the connection that Mahomes had with Tyquan Thornton on that deep ball. It will probably,
Thornton,
I would imagine,
was open three times.
I would imagine,
right?
That it would
missed him,
right,
twice.
I would imagine that guys like Thornton, Remigio, Juju Smith-Schuster, like, it might make them even more open. If Worthy is on the field and he's getting that kind of attention from the defenders.
So I would agree with that. I think it will, like, you still at this moment probably want Hollywood Brown to be the guy you pepper until you can find out Worthy's fine, but it certainly will help Kelsey. It certainly will help Thornton. Even if it doesn't help Thornton, it certainly leaves that option on the table. If you're going to tell me that Thornton was open on that three times, two of them, one was a touchdown, one should have been a touchdown, and one should have been a long play. If that presents itself three times a game for this offense, that's going to be a big deal, right? They'll get that connection going. Mahomes, I mean, I went back yesterday, or maybe it was Monday, the one that he was wide open for a touchdown, like, Mahomes had all the time in the world. That was just a bad throw. Like, he wasn't under any pressure. He wasn't anything. He didn't Russell Wilson the ball enough, right? He didn't just throw it up in the air for him. But who knows, that those were blown coverages on two of those three situations. Maybe the Giants don't do that, but if they're not, then that's where Worthy probably steps in. So yeah, I agree. He elevates the whole offense. It's basically, can Worthy be better than Remigio as a primary receiver, or Juju Smith-Schuster, who, I mean, at this point feels like is just out there to block. Like, have we even seen him targeted really this year? So I think it absolutely elevates the offense, but they're going to have to be good in other places too. They're going to have to continue to develop on the offensive line. The Giants have a good pass rush. The Giants can put some pressure. You can't let that become a thing in the game. And probably for the Chiefs, we talked about it last week, and they did it, not effectively, but they did do it. You got to at least try to establish the run game, because that takes the pressure off of everybody, right? And the Eagles are a very tough team to run against. I know the Giants front four is good. I don't know if it's as good against the run as the Eagles are, but you got to at least try. And I think that's what I mean. Like, the Chiefs will have to fail pretty badly to lose this game. And if that happens, I don't know that we can have the same conversations of everything's going to be fine. They'll get to the playoffs, man. If they're 0-3 in this division this year with still what would be 3 weeks to go before they get Rice back and all these things, and the schedule that they have coming up, it's no longer a foregone conclusion. On the other side, if they go 1-2, you're like, okay, that's what we thought they would do.
Probably also should have a conversation here at some point about what in the world is going on with Jalen Royals. Like, will he play for this team? Why, like, if he hasn't played in the first two
They're
weeks, why aren't they putting him? Why aren't they putting him on IR if he's going to be on the shelf and he's not going to be able to play? Put him on IR and go. You know, you free up a roster spot at that point, and you can go, you know, bring up somebody from the practice squad or whatever the case might be. I would like to know information about him as well, because throughout the entire offseason, the conversations were about three guys in the wide receiver room: Rice, Worthy, and Royals. And as of right now, they don't have any one of those guys. And they might have Worthy back this weekend, but I would like to have information about the rookie. Like, at least let's get, if he can go, let's at least get him some reps on the field, so at least by the middle or end of this season, he can kind of come along the way that he needs to.
I don't expect anything out of him. I'll be perfectly honest at this point. Like, I have zero expectations for Jalen Royals. Anything he provides this year to me is going to be icing and a total surprise. I don't expect anything. I mean, he's got to just get back on the field, and then he's still got to go through the rookie things that rookie receivers and Andy Reid offense just go through. Maybe by the end of the year, he was ahead of where rookies are typically early in the process. I will say that by all accounts, but yeah, I don't know how you count on anything. When is he going to play?
I don't know.
When is he going to practice?
I don't know. Can we
it's
get some
bizarre
any kind of information about this guy?
None. None, nothing, not from reporters, not from coaches, nothing. We're like, we're getting nothing on Royals. So I just stopped having any expectations for him. But it'll be the worthy show, and we'll see how much he can play through it. I love the information on Kittle and Beckham Jr. because you just think of a wide receiver trying to play with a separated shoulder or a torn labrum, whatever the medical, you know, diagnosis is. And it feels like it would make it hard to catch anything that's above your shoulders. So put it where it needs to be, Mahomes. Like it's got to be there. Now, I think the Chiefs will be fine this weekend. I just checked, the line is back to 6, oddly enough. The defense will be challenged. I don't think it'll be challenged any more than it was against the Chargers or the Eagles, though. Maybe some different kinds of challenges, but the Giants offense isn't better than the Chargers, the Eagles. And if the Chiefs play the kind of defense they played through the first two games, they ought to be able to generate enough offense against this team to be fine. Cowboys have decent, I mean, the Giants have decent pass rush. That there was no defense to be played in that game against the Cowboys late. Like it was like there was so very much Ole defense.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's nothing the Chiefs should fear in this game. Not a thing. Yes, Russell Wilson can hit a deep ball to neighbors. Take that away from them, because what else can they do?
They've got Wandale Robinson, and Robinson was pretty good in the game against the Cowboys. I think Neighbors is going to get all the attention, and that allows Robinson to be able to shine a little bit. I do like him in the game. But, yeah, I mean, like they don't have from top to bottom the skill players like the Ravens do, you know, and the Chiefs are going to be facing up, you know, off against them, or the skill players like the Eagles who they just played. They don't have
that.
They don't have that, you know, so you can sort of, if you're Steve Spagnuolo defensively, you can concentrate your efforts on a couple of top skill position players and really try to limit them.
Yeah. It should be fine. It should be fine. And then back to the original point, then you look at the history of the Chiefs playing in that stadium against this franchise, and you're like, oh, God, can we just skip this week? Can we just, like, I don't know, like, it's Sunday Night Football. It's all the hype and fanfare. Is it too much to ask to have a terrible primetime game where the Chiefs win it by 26 points? Like, is that so much to ask? We don't ask for much football. Can we ask for that? Can we ask for, you know, the Chiefs just to not give us the stress this week? It's a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday. There's no need to be stressed. Why are we stressing? Look at us. There's no stress to be had here. You walk by this video stream right now, and you're like, yeah, those are two guys that don't give a rip about anything. You know?
These guys they're wild and crazy. They're free. They're open. They're, you know, whatever. They're living their life. Not a care in the world.
It's early in the morning. Are those two guys drunk right now? That's what people are wondering. That's what they're really
thinking. I think they wonder that about you pretty much every day on the show.
That's true. We give them plenty of reasons. Trius Lotta, his last chance to join in the fun while Tommy's here, will come up in the next hour. We'll have Trius in to go through KU. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Royals, the overall tones of the season, disappointing, not disappointing. We'll have it all for you as we make our way through here on this Sports Daily. Glad to be here, everybody. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for helping get us chippy here this morning on a Wednesday. Stick around. We got more coming up.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody, to Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday here on Sports Daily. Glad to be with you today. Thanks to Crestview Country Club for their great support of the show. Listen, a lot of the Hawaiians you can find in the pro shop at Crestview Country Club. They have a wide variety of gear for you, and I have picked up a couple over the years here. One of the many reasons, it's a great place to be. So just check it out. Next time you go in, maybe give them a call, ask them, take a tour. Check out that pro shop. They got some nice stuff in there. A lot of the times it's on a good discount. A guy like me, I mean, that's a big deal.
I mean, hey, you combine Hawaiian shirts and discounts. That's like your cup of tea. Like you're,
yeah,
we're speaking your language right there.
My cup of tea.
Yeah.
another toss that one in there. Yeah. No, I love the stuff they've got there.
They ought to make that like their, you know, Crestview slogan, like Crestview Country Club, the place for Hawaiian shirts.
Yeah. You never know. We appreciate their support. Give them a call. Tell them we sent you. Ask them about all the different kinds of memberships. Jad Chambers sent me a message. He said, I almost spit out my prayer fire coffee when I saw Tommy and the Hawaiian. And I'll tell you, I said, I'm working on Tommy making this a company-wide initiative on Wednesdays for everybody to wear Hawaiian. Jad said even he would wear a Hawaiian.
No way.
If you can come up with some like Odyssey-branded Hawaiian shirt, that's how you do it.
Yeah, that's a
so
good
you
point.
Say, all right, here's the deal. Everybody's going to wear Hawaiian, Odyssey-themed Hawaiian shirts on Wednesdays. You go up the ladder now in your new position and say, I need some budget money.
That's a little culty, right? Like to make everybody on the same day wear the same shirt.
Yeah. You could do different colors. You know, like there's
how many shirts am I buying
options.
Everybody? Am I buying everybody
well,
multiple
same
shirts?
Number, it's the same number of shirts. You just have a choice in which one you pick so that everybody isn't matching. You know, you only get to choose one. But there are two or three options on which one that you have to choose.
That may be something I may have to, when we're putting together our 2026 budget, I may have
it's
to
October,
include right. a line item in there for, you know, I don't think I could put Hawaiian shirts on the budget. Yeah, that's probably going to get shot down pretty quick. I'd have to find another way to phrase it.
What is the most HR term? Uniforms.
Team
building uniforms.
Yeah.
October's budget month, right? Isn't it about budget season?
We're getting close. You get to fall
right into that fiery hell in your new position right out of the gates there. So, yeah, just slide it in there. If we get Jad Chambers walking around in a Hawaiian shirt once a week, the movement has won. Like, yeah. We have won at that point.
We got to give him – we haven't even done this. We got to give him a shout-out, too, on this show because – you know, not only, you know, for people that have listened to this show for years, he was the longtime producer of this program. He produces Steve and Ted in the Morning over on KNSS, has been doing it for years and years. He's our new engineer as well. So just like around the entire Odyssey network. So he's fixing things and he's going out to our towers all around the Wichita Metro and taking care of things and maintaining it. He's been busy, but it's been great. He's fantastic.
Chasing bats out of transmitter closets, like all the glorious things. No, big shout out to Jad. That is a big win in his career. Nobody deserves and has earned that more than our guy, Jad Chambers. But yeah, welcome in everybody. It is a Wednesday. We're going to have Shreya Slada in the next hour. We'll get ready for KU in the Big 12. Kind of two baseball topics. We'll see if we can get them both in. This Cal Raleigh, especially on a night after he hit or a morning after he hits two home runs versus Aaron Judge is interesting, but I want to talk a little bit more about what Jalen Thompson asked us yesterday, because a 12-5 defeat in a critical stretch of games where they kind of have to win them all right out of the gates leaves a bad taste and they go back under 500. They're going to finish somewhere around 500. What's really remarkable to me, I don't remember what it was. I think the Vegas win total for them this year was 79 wins, right? So if you took that Royals future, you are sweating right now. I looked at it and I was like, that's too low, man. Look at their pitching. They look at what they brought back. And yet here we are, right? Here's where they stand. I think it's multi-layered to say, has this season been a success? Wins and losses wise, I would tell you absolutely not. It has not been. And there is no scenario where it will be. Unless they literally win their last 11 games. That would be the only scenario where that would probably still play through. That may not even be enough to get them into the playoffs, by the way. So I think in that sense, it's been disappointing. They went to the playoffs a year ago. To take a step back from that is disappointing. Organizationally, though, Tommy, I don't think that I believe it's been a disappointment. Like, big picture, not just this year, they were able to elevate Jack Caglione. Now they've been able to elevate Carter Jensen. They made a couple of trades that should help them in the long term, right? If Burgert sticks in the rotation, Kolek, if nothing else, will be a player they can use. And then Noah Cameron, of course. They'll get Reagan's back. Their starting rotation, they have like six starters going into next year, which means they'll probably make a trade in the offseason. Their lineup has two, you know, what you would imagine right now is two future Hall of Famers in it, in Bobby Witt Jr. and Salvador Perez. Vinny Pasquantino is a good player. Mikel Garcia was a revelation this year. Like, there are holistically a lot of reasons, I think, to be optimistic if you're a Royals fan. Outside of the fact that they did not win enough games as they should have this year, can you even like compare what it's like right now going into this offseason versus what it was 2-3 years ago? Going into an offseason, coming off of a 50-win season and all of those things?
Yeah, I'm absolutely not going to say that it was a disappointment of a season. I mean, I know that after the playoff run a year ago, you absolutely want to follow that up with another playoff appearance and go deeper and build on the success from a year ago. And I know that at first glance, it looks like a step back, and I totally respect that. I totally recognize that. But at the same time, to your point, organizationally, there are so many different things that you can look at that, you know, I think are major, major benefits to the future of this franchise. And one of them, and I'm not saying you did this on purpose, but one of them you kind of glossed over a little bit, and that's Noah Cameron. I mean, at the beginning of the year, the two aces that were penciled in to be the top of the rotation guys were Cole Reagans and Seth Lugo. Those were the two guys. Really, the best pitchers the entire season have been Noah Cameron and Chris Bubich. And obviously, Bubich was on, you know, has been on the IR, you know, the IL. He's done for the year, all of that. But before he got hurt, he was phenomenal. And nobody expected that he was going to do anything this season in the rotation. There were question marks about whether or not he would actually be able to be a viable starter coming back from Tommy John and pitching in the bullpen a year ago and all of that. He was great. And then Noah Cameron was like a emergency, like they needed somebody to start a game early in the season. And he was lights out, and then was lights out again and again and again and again. He's a rookie, and so, you know, towards the end of the year, that kind of leveled off a little bit, you know, for him. But the two guys that were best in the rotation were two guys that nobody counted on at the very beginning of the year. And so I think that plays a lot into the future of this rotation. And then you mentioned the guys that they acquired. Ryan Burgert has been really good since they acquired him as well. I think in a lot of ways, and you know, pitching staff especially, I think the future is really bright.
Yeah, think about what the rotation would be next year in theory. It'd be Reagans, right? It'd be Lugo, it'd be Waka, it would be Cameron. I don't know what's going on with Bubich, but you'd assume it's Bubich, should be back. So there's five. And then they have some of these other options. They've got Burgett, who I think would slot in there as six. Kolek, we know, can start. That's seven options, right? They have all of these options.
Is Lorenzen a free agent after this year?
I believe so.
It was only a one-year deal they brought him back for, right? I can't remember if it was one or two.
Yeah, I think it was a one-year deal. Let's double-check that. Some of them will continue to help them in the bullpen, right? And some of them, yeah, he signed a one-year deal this year. So some of them will help him in the bullpen. Some will probably get traded. I would imagine they'll make a pretty significant trade, as they have the last couple of off seasons, to go in and, you know, do something in the outfield with some of this pitching. Depending on which guy they decided to move, if they get a clean bill of health and Bubich looks great and he doesn't have any control beyond next year, That's a part of a pretty big trade, right? Or they use it. So I think when you look at that, when you look at the fact that you have about six guys that are, you know, locks to be in the starting lineup, there's not a lot of, you know, they're in pretty good position. It's too bad they didn't win enough games this year. They had a lot of pitching injuries working against them, and they had one of the weirdest offenses I've ever seen working against them. That is a concern, though, because that goes back to last year toward the end of the year, too. Like, I like these players individually, but they have to figure out a way to get more consistency out of the offense, which they could do through a trade, middle of the lineup outfield bat that is a flat run producer. Like, how do you find Vinny Pasquantino for the outfield?
And right? Keep in mind, they tried to do that before the start of the season. Like, weren't sure they were in on, I think they were in on a Rosarena. Like there were a couple of guys that they were really trying to get to be a middle of the lineup outfield bat, and they weren't able to acquire anybody. That's got to be at the top of the priority list this offseason.
For sure. For sure. And it can't be some combination of utility players again this year. I'm good with Isbell in center. I'm good with Pasquantino in right. It's
Caglione.
Literally a left.
Caglione in right.
Mixing up my Italian guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, I need a left fielder that can produce runs flat. That's it. Like, again, I say the Vinny Pasquantino of the outfield, because Pasquantino does that thing and better than anything else.
It's probably not going to be this guy specifically, but I do think, and I'm higher on him, I think, overall than you are. But think of how the offense turned around for a while, at least, when they traded for Yastrzemski. And Yastrzemski came in and started playing left field. He probably will not re-sign with the Royals, and I'm not sure that he's the guy that the Royals should target for a long-term deal. I think there might be better options on the open market during the offseason for them to go and pursue. But when they acquired him, and I know they also got Randall Grichuk, and he had a couple of nice moments, and Adam Frazier, all of that. But really, it was Yastrzemski who solidified himself, I think, in left field as he was more of a leadoff guy. But offensively, he was able to get the job done, and that lineup did start to turn around, at least for a while, once they acquired him. They need to have somebody consistently from the beginning of the season be able to fill that kind of role.
They can go find somebody. They have the pitching to trade. Yastrzemski would feel like a Band-Aid to me. And it's not anything against the player. Like, I'd like to see him return to the team, but you need that position as solidified as these other spots in the lineup. They tried it last year with Melendez and Renfro. Didn't work, right? They've tried it this year with about 12 different guys. Hasn't worked. Go make it this is our left fielder now. Like, go make that kind of move. But all in all, disappointing number of wins. Not a disappointing season, because they added to the team over the course of it. We'll see if they can win 11 straight and hope for a chance into the postseason. They play right here tonight on KFH. Second hour, Shreyas Lada coming up. We'll get into the Cal Raleigh versus Aaron Judge debate. Speaking of baseball, it's all coming in another hour of Sports Daily. Stick around.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily.
Welcome in, everybody. Another hour here of Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster with you on a Wednesday, a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday. We've got Tommy participating on his final Hawaiian shirt Wednesday here, petitioning him to make it a company-wide initiative. I would petition all the listeners out there, make it a city-wide initiative, a worldwide initiative. Why not? Is the only question I have for you. Why not do this?
You're starting a movement. I appreciate that. I appreciate your intensity on this.
I don't even remember where the movement started, to be perfectly honest with you. Paul Savage and I just happened to, I think, wear a Hawaiian shirt on the same day. And I think we just said, we should make it a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday. I think that's where this thing started. And if anybody knows societal fashion trends, it's our buddy Paul Savage, who will be in Friday for picks, as will Tommy, not just this final Friday of his time here as a primary host, but we'll continue to make picks throughout the year. Brandon, TJ will come in, and I don't even know if we've officially announced either. Brandon and TJ are going to be taking over your chair in a dual role moving forward on the program. So that will be a lot of fun. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to getting them in as well. It'll be a nice, easy transition because they've been getting those reps for a long time now.
And look, it makes a lot of sense. Like, I'm not sure that there's any one singular person that can do the job that I do, right? You've got to have multiple people be able to fill the shoes of mine. So, I mean, that makes sense to me. I get that.
Yeah. multiple people to fill the shoes.
Yeah. Those guys will do a great job. TJ and Brandon are phenomenal. And
yeah, they're going to be good. It'll be good. And Tommy's still going to be in the building. Across the hall. I don't even know. Did you move offices in your new role?
Nope.
Did you switch?
Nope. Same office. It's pretty simple, pretty easy move, which is good. But I'll be in on Fridays to do picks. And, also if there are times that I need to fill in, I can probably make that happen too. So I'm not going to be totally gone, from this program.
Yeah. The things will feel similar, not totally the same, but the goal was to keep, the momentum that we built over the last 3 years, with Tommy in the chair there. We'll get into KU coming up in this hour. Definitely want to spend a little time on this Cal Raleigh. The Cal Raleigh with a couple more home runs tonight. Just an unbelievable season for the big dumper. And it might feel like it came out of nowhere. It's not out of nowhere. I mean, he's been a good player for a long time. But this historic season for him, how does it stack up? We'll dig in because it's going to create, I'll tell you, well, I'll save it for when we have the conversation, this Judge versus Raleigh AL MVP scenario. The Major League Baseball playoff race has gotten really interesting. You have a lot of things happening right now in it. You basically have, Houston, the Red Sox, Seattle, Cleveland, Texas, and I suppose still Kansas City, although it's the most outside shot. All vying for two or three spots. The Yankees are a couple of games up. It's tight. I mean, it hasn't been very interesting in the National League, Tommy, but it's even. The National League has gotten a little tighter in the last couple of weeks here because the Mets are in a free fall. So we're getting what we want out of Major League Baseball. This is what you want. To me, like the goal of all of this, when they added the third wild card and they've done, like the goal should always be in sports. And this goes for baseball. It goes for the NFL when they added a playoff team. When we talk about college football expansion, the goal should always be, and there is a point of no return, but it should always be to keep the most fan bases interested and engaged for as long as you can without watering things down, obviously. And every sport's a little bit different in that. Like, what's the point of watering down? We go to 68 teams in the NCAA tournament. I don't think it's watered down, quite frankly, because of the format of that tournament. College football is a more interesting debate. Is 12 enough? Would 16 water it down? I don't know the answer to that. In the NFL, adding a playoff team, I don't know how you feel about it, did not water it down at all to me. Adding the baseball team has not watered it down. Baseball the most because that team has the best chance of all the sports to win an actual World Series. But this is good. I mean, this is a win for baseball. Baseball has had a bunch of wins in major changes they've made over the last 2-3 years.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I feel like for me, it's less about the number of teams participating and it's more about the format in which they are participating. I hated, and I know a lot of people hated, the one game play-in for the wild card teams because baseball is not a one game winner take all sport. It's just not like any team can win on any night. Baseball more than any other sport is a series type sport. I mean, probably basketball like NBA after that, but really it's baseball in that regard. So I hated that play-in game. I hated the way that, you had a team that battled for 8 months and they were potentially a game outside and they had to play in a playing game and it all came down to one game. Like, I hated that. Like, at the very minimum, make it a best of three. So, they made that change. Like, if you're going to add more teams into a postseason format, that's fine as long as that format is conducive to the sport that they're playing. And so, yeah, I feel like Major League Baseball totally got that right.
Yeah, it's They didn't get a lot. They got the All-Star game wrong. They got all these things wrong. They're getting it all right now and changing the rules, the pitch clock, the, enhancing, bringing back stolen bases, the banning of the shift. Like, they've been getting it all right. The sport is so much better and healthier, I think, than it was. I don't know. How long are we into this? Let's call it 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's been good. It's giving more teams the opportunity. I mean, I follow two teams. They're both probably going to fizzle out here in the final 2 weeks. But man, we were joking last night. They got us to football season, right? They got us to football season. That's all you can, you know, when you're a fan of a baseball team, you just want to have a chance at the end there. And I would say September 17th is, that's pretty close to the end. When were the Royals seasons before last year done? Usually May.
Early
May, June early. At the absolute latest.
Yeah. Yep.
And then you're sitting there and then it's like, what now? What are we supposed to do? Baseball's not a sport where you just go watch random games all the time. I love baseball, but that's not how anybody consumes baseball. You consume baseball by watching your team every day. That's how you consume baseball. And I'm thankful that the Royals have allowed us to do that at a more relevant pace. They got us to football season. We made it to football season.
It wasn't that long ago, 2 years ago, where, you know, maybe 3 years ago, when it was like the heart of baseball season, and you and I, like, the Royals were such an afterthought that maybe every once in a while we would mention something about the organization, like something they were doing, but we weren't going through game by game. We weren't recapping the games. We weren't talking about, because they didn't really matter. Like, they were so far out of it. They were losing 90, 100 games every single year. And then, to your point, they were done early in the season. Like, it was, they got off to a bad start and then, you know, boom, they're done. It really, it wasn't until, you know, Matt Quatrero, JJ Piccolo, those two guys really, you know, when they were brought in, Matheny was gone, Dayton Moore was gone, all of that, that the conversations really started to ramp up.
Yeah. It's, we're there. We're there with the Royals. I'm excited for next year. And I think that's a good sign. Speaking of weird baseball, did you see Ohtani last night? 5 no hit innings and hit his 50th home run. And then their bullpen blew the lead.
Yeah.
But Ohtani sits here. You know, Ohtani this year, it's not, I'm curious to see, I'm curious to see what, you know, happens. And we'll talk about this when we talk about Judge and Cal Raleigh, but Ohtani, when he wasn't able to pitch for most of this year, he's not even, like, Paul Skenes has a higher WAR than Shohei Ohtani, at least on ESPN's. And I know WARs can get a little bit different. Shohei is a runaway favorite as the NL MVP. Paul Skenes is a runaway favorite as the NL Cy Young. What if Paul Skenes pitched for a good team and had like 20 wins? Would he be an MVP candidate this year? There aren't a lot of awards right now in Major League Baseball that are competitive. They're all foregone conclusions, basically. Maybe like the National League Rookie of the Year. Everything else is like -1,000 or worse. So it's not.
Who's
not
the,
a
by
lot
the way,
of debate.
Who's the National League Rookie of the Year leader? Is it Drake Baldwin? Is he in the lead?
Cade Horton.
Okay.
Leader, followed closely by Drake Baldwin.
Okay.
And then Isaac Collins and Caleb Durbin of the Brewers, if that tells you anything. Like, I'm not sure I can tell you anything about, I know you obviously know Drake Baldwin.
Baldwin's my guy. I mean, I'm a Braves fan, and Baldwin's been one of the main, like, one of the few bright spots this year for the Braves. And they're like 16 games under 500. So super disappointing, but I'd like to see him win Rookie of the Year.
He's got a shot. It's close right now. Just for the sake of the conversation we're about to have, Aaron Judge, a runaway favorite over Cal Raleigh. Should he be? That's what we'll talk about next. This dynamic of WAR versus tradition, let's call it, in Major League Baseball, when you have guys that just basically the same guys winning it every year. We'll talk about it next on Sports Daily. We've got Trius Lotta coming up this hour to talk a little KU football. Stick around. It's a Wednesday, everybody.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's a Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday here on Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you each and every day. We've got Trius Lotta coming up today. He will be in a little bit later. We're going to have this MVP debate discussion, probably more than a debate. It's all what's on tap the rest of the hour, brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company, celebrating National Pepperoni Pizza Day this Saturday, which is September 20th. with a $9.20 pepperoni pizza at Pep Pepperoni Pizza or WBC's famous pepperoni rolls. Enjoy National Pepperoni Pizza Day at WBC on 920 with $9.20 specials. Wichita Brewing Company, pepperoni pizzas and beer made here. All right, we come back here, Tommy. And let's get into this. So Aaron Judge is going to win the MVP. He is at least according to Vegas, he's a prohibitive favorite. Cal Raleigh's 5-1. So still not totally out of the woods. Two home runs yesterday probably altered those odds as he, you know, passed Mickey Mantle on the list for switch hitters. He passed Ken Griffey Jr. Tying, I should say, Ken Griffey Jr. for the franchise record. Most home runs by a catcher. He broke Salvador Perez's record of a few years ago. He plays catcher. It's all there. You know, in most circumstances, this is your MVP. The problem for him is Aaron Judge is an animal and just puts up numbers that are absolutely insane and hard to argue with, especially if you subscribe to analytics. His WAR is higher still, despite all those great power numbers, his WAR is higher. So look, I don't know where you stand on this. I have a hard time with it. I want to see Cal Raleigh win this award. Okay. But pretty simply for me, I want to see him win the award. Judge is, you know, he's a .326 hitter in an era where guys don't hit for that kind of average. Ton of power, obviously, 48 home runs, 103 RBIs. His OPS is out of this world. I don't know how you argue with that stuff, but I would like to see Cal Raleigh win the award. I don't think he will.
I guess I want to know why. With Cal Raleigh, like, what? Why do you want to see him win the award? Is it
catcher? All the historical things that are happening. The problem is he's a .247 hitter. You know, when you look at it, and his OPS is, I mean, his OPS is just quite a bit lower. So
it's around nine, isn't it? Like 900,
950.
It's
great.
Yeah,
but it's not Aaron Judge's, you know, 1127. Yeah. So that's what makes it tough. Like if Cal Raleigh this year, I don't know where he'd stand like in the National League. He is right near Shohei in WAR. There have been years though, like where Shohei's WAR is like, you're not even in the same stratosphere where it's like, well, you can't really beat him and he's going to win it again this year, just as a hitter anyway, but in the National League. But I don't know that Judge is that much ahead of Raleigh. It's very much like an old school versus new school conversation. I remember with the year Salvi broke the record. I don't know. And I'm not on social media much. I think, you know, people know that you can always reach out to us on X or Twitter and we'll get back to you over time. But I'm not on there constantly like some people are. One of the most heated things that's ever happened was that year when I said Salvador Perez isn't a top five MVP candidate. Are you kidding me? And like out of left field, Yankee fans were furious that I would even have the audacity to suggest it. The guy that just broke the record for home runs for a catcher ever and had an incredible offensive season, who played catcher every day, would even be considered because his WAR wasn't very high. And all of these things, and I'm just sitting there like, guys, like I like the metrics too, but you can't argue with home runs. You can't argue with RBIs. Like these are still very valuable metrics for a guy playing in a pitcher's park, by the way. Like, what are we doing here? Like mad that I would even have the, like, well, how could you even say that? He's not even the highest WAR catcher.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I think, and I don't want to get into a discussion because I know this is like talked about ad nauseum by people all over the place about the definition of what a most valuable player is and how you interpret most valuable player. But I mean, if you take it at its most basic, like the meaning of the words most valuable player, Aaron Judge is the most valuable player for his team. Like, and we can look at
That's tough.
Just we can look at just the period of time that he was on the IL and he didn't play. And the Yankees went like this. Like they went, like they fell off a cliff when Aaron Judge was not in the lineup when he wasn't playing. And then as soon as he came back, they were good to go. He is by far the most valuable player for his team in the American League.
He's played 141 games this year.
Well, I get it. But like, and I'm not saying Cal Raleigh isn't valuable for his team. He absolutely is. But if you're looking at it from a value perspective, if you're looking at it for how important is a particular player to his team, Aaron Judge is more valuable for the Yankees than Cal Raleigh is for the Mariners. It's not by a ton, but I would certainly say that Aaron Judge is more valuable.
So Raleigh has more stolen bases, which I think is hilarious, by the way. Here's what happened to Salvi, and I think is what's happening to Cal Raleigh. The Aaron Judge's numbers, as far as his on-base percentage and his up, they're so inflated by the number of walks he takes. And that's, it's the same conversation I had that year with Salvi. Like the main reason that it looks so much like that you're, because if you watch the two players play, it's not as far apart as people want it to seem like it is. Cal Raleigh has more home runs this year. He has more RBIs this year. He has been a more productive hitter in those categories. The difference in why these other analytics metrics go higher is because Judge has, what is he? Let me just 113 to 92. Yeah, I mean, it's he walks a ton.
Did anybody ding Barry Bonds when he was winning MVPs for the amount of walks he had? No, I'm like, that was part of like.
I'm not trying to ding Aaron Judge either, by the way. I'm not. I'm just like, I don't want to ignore everything else because OPS is high. And I will fully and openly admit I am nostalgic when it comes to baseball. I love the romance of the game. And we have a catcher having the best catcher season ever. And for Aaron Judge, this isn't even close to Aaron Judge's best season. Right. Well, it depends on how you look at that. I mean, he's up there in OPS, but by the numbers that I still think matter, it's not his best season. And he wins it. You know, he won it 2 of the last 3 years. I just think that it's an interesting discussion to have. Aaron Judge doesn't have to play catcher.
Yeah.
Right. What is a more difficult and important position on half of the game? Cal Raleigh has an impact on every single pitch in a game, right? That has to mean something.
You know what?
Aaron Judge plays left field.
I think in my mind, I don't think Major League Baseball will ever do this, but I do think a pretty easy fix for debates like this would be if they went to what the NFL does, where you've got the NFL MVP, the most valuable player, and then you've got the offensive player of the year. Like, they're two different categories entirely.
Which one would be which, though?
Well, like, in this regard, I mean, I would say Aaron Judge is the most valuable player. But I would say Cal Raleigh is the offensive player of the year.
I'd flip him because Raleigh's a catcher, right? Raleigh plays a more premium defensive position than Aaron Judge does.
Offensive player of the year. Like,
I know. That's what I'm saying. So I would say Raleigh would lend itself more to the complete package of MVP, where Judge you could give the offensive
because you
player.
Already have an MVP and a Cy Young. So you've got an MVP and then you've got the best pitcher. And so pitchers like rarely win. Like they're rarely in the, like I know Tarek Skubal is up there for Orlando. Like it doesn't happen very often where pitchers are also getting the MVP. So why not have, I don't think Major League Baseball will do this, but why not have an MVP and then an offensive player of the year to go alongside your Cy Young award winner?
Yeah, they won't do that. You're right. Shohei Ohtani, a part of the reason he's unbeatable is because of what he does as a pitcher.
Yeah.
To go on, he'd win it most years only as a hitter. But when you put his pitching in, nobody else has a chance. And this isn't that way. But that's the thing for me with Raleigh. I would argue like total package isn't getting enough credit in this either. He's a catcher, and that's why I loved Salvador Perez's season. These guys are outside of a shortstop and a center fielder. Like those are the three premium defensive positions. A catcher impacts the pitching on every single pitch. He calls a game, maybe less so than they used to now with the earpieces and all that. But They're impacting every single pitch of a game. That has to mean something too. No offense to, you know, to outfielders, but he's an outfielder. So it's a more premium position. And baseball tells us this too, by the way. How often do shortstops and catchers get overdrafted? Right? Why is that? Because they play a premium defensive position. And so that's not factored in like at all to this, which I think it should be. It'd be like if Aaron Judge was a DH, would we be having the same conversation? Probably, even though that's not really fair to Cal Raleigh. I don't know how I would vote if I had to vote, but man, I'd love to see, again, for the romance of the game, the catcher that's having the season, the switch hitter that's having the season, doing all of these things we've never seen before, get the nod in a pretty tight year. That's the other thing. It's close. Like their war is not that far apart. Sometimes you can't ignore it. This year, it's close. Like it's closer than it has been in other years. I'd like to see Raleigh get the award. I don't know what he would have to do, Tommy, to get there. He's at 56 home runs right now. What is Judge's home run record? 62?
Yeah.
Can Raleigh hit 6 home runs in the final 11 games?
I mean, I think if he got to, even if he just got to 60, like if he got to 60 at that point, it'd be a lot more difficult, I think, to not give him the MVP.
Well, but why? It's not going to change the war at all, right? Nothing would change. Like their wars wouldn't really change if he hits 4 more home runs this year. But, right, it's because of that magic number. And I would argue that he's already hit magic numbers. Right, he's already hit the switch hitter magic number. Like he's already done that. He's leading the league in home runs anyway. Does hitting 4 more and getting to a nice round number really make that much of a difference on the season that he's had? I would say yes, it does. But because of, again, the romance of baseball, that's why I want to see him get it. So I hope he gets to 60. Maybe not at the mercy of the Royals, but you know that's kind of the situation we face. But yeah, if he could get to 60 home runs. How much fun would that be to just try to sort that out? I was listening to both the Royals and the Rangers driving around soccer practice and everything last night. I can't remember which broadcast brought it up. It was one of them. So I was flipping back and forth. And they were like, look, if you're old school baseball and you have an MVP vote, you're probably voting for Raleigh. If you're new school and you subscribe to the metrics and war, you're voting for Judge. And they had talked to a bunch of voters, and it was like a very clear dividing line on where people stood on this particular debate. But I think it's fascinating. And then, you know, over in the National League, Shohei Ohtani is going to get it again, even though he hadn't pitched much. He's starting to pitch again. He's a machine. It would be interesting if they were both still in the same league, Judge and Ohtani, right now, and how that would go. Like this year only, because when Ohtani pitches, it's a foregone conclusion. But this year, it would be so close. Paul Skeens, Tommy, as we talk about awards and navigate just a couple of minutes left, have you seen some of the absolutely insane numbers with him? Like if he had only 2 runs of support a game, what his numbers would be versus like 3 runs of support, what his numbers would be based on what he's done. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to just the Pirates organization in general. Like, and I know that they don't want to move their most prized possession, but you either need to get him out of there and get a huge return for him, or you've got to invest in the team. Like, it's got to be one or the other, because you can't continue this, and he's not going to want to continue being a part of an organization where he's getting no run support at all. So either move him and get value in return, or start to spend some money to help him out.
He's not a free agent until 2030, man. Tommy. He's got 4 years. Could you imagine? They're not going to do that yet, but could you imagine if they – it'd be like Juan Soto, right? Like, we're going to put Skeens up on the market with 4 years of control.
There would be 29 teams that would be – clamoring to get him, I would imagine.
Yeah, it would be wild. That won't happen. I mean, the Pirates have got to figure it out. I mean, they've got another young pitcher coming up too, that's also really good. They could do something, and they have O'Neill Cruz. Like, figure it out, Pirates. Can you not go find 3 or 4 journeymen to give you a chance to in the lineup. It's wild. How bad you want to talk about an Oregon. Could you imagine being a Pirates fan ever?
No,
like
not at all.
I think I thought about this a lot with the Royals when they were struggling through some things. And I'm like, man, could you imagine being a Pirates fan?
You probably have to go all the way back to the early 90s.
They had a couple cups of coffee with Clint Hurdle.
Yeah, I mean, and like Andrew McCutchen and like all of that. Like they had a couple moments, but consistently it was Jim Leland, Barry Bonds early before he went to the Giants, Bobby Bonilla, like that Pirates era, early 90s, Doug Drabek was like their ace back in the day. That was probably the last time that, you know, a Pirates fan had some consistent success.
And they have that stadium, which I haven't been there yet, but most people say is like the best setting,
yeah,
like that the league has. I just poor Paul Skeens, poor Pirate fans. I mean, let's not say poor Paul Skeens. He seems to be doing pretty well for himself. But yeah, some of these numbers, if you haven't, go do a quick search on the lack of run support that he's received. I have him in fantasy baseball, and we're into like the almost the very end, and he pitched yesterday, and I was like, he gave up two runs in the first inning, and I was like, oh great, well he's gonna lose, like two runs in the first inning to the best pitcher in baseball, yeah. No chance.
Yep,
he doesn't have a chance. He's gonna lose that game. It's crazy. He's gonna win that award. Not a lot of award excitement. We'll watch the big dumper. See if he can get to 60. It may take that for him to have a chance at this thing. But we'll keep our eye on it because the Royals play them right now. Hopefully he gets them all later on. Hey, Open Streets ICT Douglas happening Sunday, September 28th, 12 to 4. It's a free community event. Opens 3 miles of Douglas from Grove to Glen. Opening by closing it to motorized traffic. You can walk, bike, skate, do all the fun stuff. 5 activity hubs with live music, family activities, and more. Food trucks, street vendors, performers along the route. Visit Open Streets ICT for those details. Shreya Slada coming up. We're going to look ahead to KU's Big 12 opener. Our first look there. Don't go away. More Sports Daily right after this.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on a Wednesday. We are happy to be joined by Shreya Slada, our KU insider, beat reporter at the KC Star, for KU football, the basketball football in focus here, Shreya, as we get ready to open Big 12 play. KU, big favorites at home this weekend at the booth. First Big 12 action for the new digs. How are we feeling this week?
Yeah, pretty good. I think Kansas, 12.5-point favorites over West Virginia. I mentioned this to a friend of mine yesterday. It's the type of game that Kansas wins by, 14 to 21 points. You feel good about the way Kansas is going to look and the type of game that you need to kind of win in a overwhelmingly confident way, I think, because that's going to start the start of conference play. And it's the type of game that, if they have any aspirations of winning a Big 12 championship, it starts with, not really struggling into West Virginia.
Coming off the bye week, Shreyas, and coming off of that loss to Missouri, what were the major things that you feel like Kansas and Lance Leipold needed to focus on to get ready for the start of conference play?
Yeah, tackling was horrendous against Missouri. I think, especially on defense, it was really, really bad against the two running backs who ran all over Kansas. Obviously, the run defense has to be better than it was. But just also play in the trenches. I think they got dominated both offensive, defensive line. And you could see that in that advantage. I don't think, luckily for Kansas, there will be a team as good as Missouri on the line, both sides. But Texas Tech should probably be a big test for them when that comes around. And then, of course, just looking at, and we've talked about this all last year, is it continues to be something to look at, is end of half play, end of game play, you know, those last 2 minutes in each part of the game, it feels like they got to get better job of clock management, better job of controlling the clock, better job of not making bad errors in those last 2 minutes.
As we look at the Big 12 as a whole, K-State's off this week. They're certainly not what we thought they were. Texas Tech looks like what we thought they would look like. Arizona State, maybe not quite as good as we thought. I don't know how you feel about Iowa State. It does feel a little more uncertain, maybe, than we anticipated, or maybe it doesn't. But at least to me, it feels like KU could certainly be a top half of this league team this year.
I think they should be. Their schedule should allow them to be at least a top five team this year. If this team is as good as they've looked in the first three games of the season, they should be contending for a Big 12 title. You know, I'm not sitting there and saying they looked amazing against Missouri. They did not. But they were in that game when they had no business being in that game for a lot of that game. And the thing that I will continue to reiterate, and I always talk about, the big question was, how good does Jalen Daniels look? Well, Jalen Daniels looks like the best player on the team, bar none. Okay. And that's the standard that needed to be set for them to contend for a Big 12 title, to be in the conversation, to even have a chance to win lose less than three games. You know, I look at the rest of their schedule like, okay, I think they can beat K-State. If they don't beat K-State this year, it's never going to happen. I think they'll be competitive against Texas Tech. I don't think they'll win that game. I think Utah and Arizona could be a toss-up. But either way, like, if you're winning one of Utah and Arizona, if like they finish 1-3 or 1-2 in the last three games of the year, that's a team that has won, you know, nine, that means. I think they should win against West Virginia, Cincinnati, UCF. Obviously, we have to see it to happen. But if this team is for real, they will take care of business against inferior Big 12 opponents, which is a lot of what it is the next couple of weeks before they play Texas Tech.
You have a new article that came out this morning from the Kansas City Star talking about Jalen Daniels and talking about his ability to bounce back from mistakes that he's made and things like that, where the confidence has clearly grown for him. He doesn't look timid, or doesn't look, you know, upset after bad plays or whatever from what we saw a season ago and before that. What do you attribute all of that to?
You know, I think a little bit of it is he knows what's at stake, right? You know, this is his last time to make a real chance to improve his draft stock. I was talking about this with a friend. It's like, this quarterback class in 2026 looks horrendous right now. Guys that we thought were going to be really, really good have not been really good. They've been really mediocre or bad. So if Jalen Daniels puts together a pretty good season, you know, like in the point of where we're talking about in Heisman contention race, like we were in 2022, his draft stock is going to skyrocket, like probably from late pick to anywhere from the first to three rounds. It obviously depends on how he plays the rest of the way, but I think he knows what's at stake. I think he knows this team needs him to be calm and collected. He knows that if he goes out there and makes a mistake, it's not the end of the world. He doesn't have to go make it up on the next play, which I think sometimes last year he felt like he needed to do. And then we saw him make more mistakes. Things are not ballooning for him. You know, in the Missouri game, I felt like he played a B+, A- game against a very difficult defense. That pick was bad, but that was a desperation pick while trying to throw away the ball in a scenario that he shouldn't have even been in, because they should have gone for fourth down the previous drive. I've been very impressed with him. I've been impressed with his ability to kind of know when to do different things on the field, whether it's tuck and run or just checking it down. And other times he's testing his arm with guys like Emmanuel Henderson. I think this is the Jalen Daniels that people expected in 2023 and didn't get because of his back surgery, and the Jalen Daniels that people hoped to see last year, but obviously he struggled to start the year.
I think the question for me, Shreyas Latta, KU beat reporter for the KC Star, KU Insider, when I watched that game against Missouri, like, there were a lot of ways in which Kansas was dominated, but they were there in the end. Like, which thing is the takeaway, that they were kind of dominated in yards and in some of these categories, or that the fact that they were there? I don't know how much to take of either of those things away from that game.
Well, I think rivalry games are inherently a weird, just crazy things happen. But I mean, like, they were up 21-6 at one point,
right?
Like, I never felt like if that was probably the only point in the game where I felt, okay, Kansas is in control. Obviously, that quickly changed. But I think it's important to remember that, like, you know, if you replay that game, Missouri probably wins 7 out of 10 times. But if Kansas winning 3 out of 10 times happens, that's pretty good in my mind because Missouri was, I think, basically a touchdown favorite going into the game. And that game was competitive all the way until, like, the last 3 minutes, right? I obviously there are things that Kansas fans wish they could take back, and I'm sure the Kansas team wish they could take back. But honestly, for how ugly it looked like at points, for Kansas to hang around is a test of their resilience and a test of to show, wow, like, this team is for real. Even if they're not quite at the level to beat a good team like Missouri, like, Missouri looks like a top 15 team in the country. This team is going to make some noise in the Big 12 if, you know, they can continue what they're doing. Obviously, they have to be better at run defense, overall defense. Jalen needs to come to be good. The running game has to be a lot better than it was against Missouri. But I'm encouraged, honestly. If I was a Kansas fan, I'd be encouraged from what I've seen in the first three games because, you know, they took care of business against Fresno State. They played really well. They covered the spread. Obviously, not the end-all, be-all, but, you know, it was a big game. Wagner was Wagner. You know, they did what they needed to do. And then in Missouri, a game in Columbia, they were competitive for most of it. So even though it wasn't, you know, on the stat sheet says, okay, maybe they should have not been as whatever, at the end of the day, winning ugly is better than not winning at all. And they were close to winning an ugly game there.
Yeah.
What do we know about West Virginia? I mean, obviously they're rebuilding. Rich Rodriguez is back as the head coach after almost 20 years away from the program. You know, he's trying to, you know, reestablish his ways, his philosophies, and all of that. They're not a great team right now, but what do we know about them, and where can they have some success against Kansas?
Yeah, they play with a really fast tempo, so it's going to be interesting to see how – I think it's like the second highest in the entire nation. So it's going to be interesting to see how KU's defense is. You know, you got to make sure, you know, they line up properly. They make sure they don't get rushed too much. They're pretty creative in offense, run a heavy offense. They've been like juggling three different quarterbacks the last two games, which is interesting. Their run defense is elite, at least obviously so far. They haven't played the greatest teams, but they're only allowing 2.4 yards per carry, less than 100 yards rushing per day, per game. I think Rich Rodriguez is putting West Virginia in a conversation to be a good team in a year or two. I don't think they're a good team right now, but you know, if they can be in the middle tier of the conference, that's a big step up from what they were last year. I mean, obviously, I know they were a little under 500 last year, but everyone knew with how many newcomers coming into this team, for West Virginia, they were never going to be a top end of a conference team.
Yeah.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I think that's a good way to put it. Are they better than we thought they would be? Kansas, a 13.5-point favorite. It's a 5 o'clock kick time on Saturday. A little odd on the kick time, but it should be a fun atmosphere. We'll see if they can get it done. Shreyas, I don't know if you noticed, Tommy is in for his last Wednesday. Not to be concerned. He finally jumped in, and one of these things in the video stream is not like the other here. And
I had to throw Jacob a bone for my final Wednesday on the show. I had to, you know, rock the Hawaiian for at least one time.
I got you. Congrats on the last Wednesday. Yeah. Well, I hope it's good news.
It's good news.
I think I saw on Facebook.
Very good news. Very good news.
We'll be here. You'll have you'll still have me to deal with. Brandon and TJ will be in. So we'll still be rocking and rolling on these Wednesday visits. Shreyas, we'll go find your work at the KC Star leading up to the game. He'll get you all prepared for West Virginia, the Big 12 opener for KU. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
There goes Shreyas Lotta. Man, what a time, Tommy. What a time. KU football, absolutely relevant again. Thank goodness. I think for
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Me, it was small, but the tiny fear of all the turnover this year leading to a bad year, it doesn't, that seems very out of the realm of possibilities here. I think they'll be relevant all year.
Yeah.
They'll make a bowl game.
I agree. I mean, I think that they are head and shoulders better than West Virginia is. They've got to go out there and prove that in the Big 12 opener inside the booth on Saturday. They've got to flex a little bit and show that they are a legitimate top half, maybe even better team in that conference. And against a team like West Virginia that's clearly rebuilding, clearly inferior, they've got to do a good job, you know, going into that game and establishing themselves. And the fact that they can, you know, say, hey, look at us. Like, we deserve to be credited amongst our peers in the Big 12.
Yeah. They're there. I'm glad West Virginia's back, too, by the way. I'm glad Rich Rodriguez is back there. All right, we got more Sports Daily coming your way. Don't go away on our Wednesday.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.